Good morning. This is your chance. Well, I'm not even going to say go grab a cup of coffee because you're done. If you don't have it with you, you're in here for the duration. So we're happy to have you eat and drink in here, but now that I've started, you're all here. So good morning. Kristen and I were saying, I'm sure everybody knows who I am. You don't need to introduce me. There's probably some of you sitting out there saying, I'm not really sure who she is. So my name's Mary Young, married to Bill Young, one of the pastors here. So yeah, woohoo's right. Bill was giving me a pep talk on the way out. He said, honey, you're having a good hair day. I think he knew that. I said, I don't even know if he knows what a good hair day is. I said, oh, thanks, you know. I said to him last night, do you want to know what I'm wearing tomorrow? Okay, I tried on clothes for over an hour yesterday. I'll be trying to figure out what I'd feel comfortable in, what would work, because you have to have your microphone like in a pocket. And I said to Brady, I had a really cute outfit planned, but I couldn't wear it because of the whole microphone issue. So I said to Bill and Timothy last night, you guys, I spent an hour trying to decide what I'm going to wear tomorrow. And they were eating dinner, and they said, okay. And I said, okay, if either one of you were women, you would have probably said to me, well, what is it? What are you going to wear? And he cleverly caught himself, and he said, well, I know whatever you're going to wear, you'll look beautiful. And I said, but don't you want me to show you what I'm going to wear? But anyway, so my name's Mary Young, and here I am this morning. I want to agree with Krista and thank all the women that made this morning possible. We've been planning this and talking about it for a number of months. Brady, before I go on, am I in the right spot for... All right, gave me the thumbs up. There's actually an X on the carpet up here, but I want to make sure I can swivel to the right. And this group over here to the left, I contemplated making all you guys move because I'm like, you're clear over there, but I want you to feel comfortable. I'm just glad you're here. I'm glad all of you guys are here. So anyway, when we started planning this and talking about it, it was like September-ish, maybe October-ish, and you think, January. Suddenly it's January, and I thought, I hope women lock into this. I hope they take advantage of it. And you are. You're here. Got some breakfast. Got some fellowship. We're excited about this morning. I'm excited about this morning. I found a wonderful quote by George Mueller. He says, I delight in speaking well of your name. And I'm mostly excited about that this morning because I want to share things I feel like the Lord has given me, and I was excited on the way over here because I thought, I sincerely delight in speaking well of the Lord's name. So I had a number of you ask me, well, what is this talk going to be about? Restore, you know, January, fitness goals. Is it about like how you look and feel in your clothes or you doing you and being the answer to your own questions? And I thought, well, that might be the talk some of you want to hear, but that's not exactly what I'm going to share. So I think the official hashtag on that is sorry, not sorry, you know, so that you kind of know ahead of time, here's what I'm not going to share. But when we planned the social, when we were talking about it as pastor's wives, we were trying to think, look, we're involved in a lot of women's lives. What do women think about? What are they burdened by? What's going on in their world? And thinking about who we are and how we define our identities are topics that most of us can struggle with or we can identify with. And if you're sitting here thinking, oh, that's not me, you will. You will have a time in your life that you struggle with this. So I'm just going to encourage you with that straight off the bat. So we thought that this would be a good thing for us to talk about. So let's pray and then we'll get started. Lord, I want to thank you for this morning. I thank you for each woman that's here. I don't believe it's by accident anyone's here. Even if they woke up this morning and didn't know they were coming, here they are. And you have something to say to them. My prayer, Lord, sincerely, is that each woman would have one takeaway. There would be one thing that she would leave with, that she could walk in, that she could be obedient to, that she could talk to you about, that would draw her closer to you. It would change her life. It would help restore her. Lord, you're in the business of restoring lives, and I thank you for the opportunity this morning just to hear from you. Help us to leave everything at home, everything else going on in our lives, away right now. Help us to just focus on you and what you have. Help us to learn. Help us to be vulnerable. Help us to share with one another in the breakdown times. Help us to get to know you a little bit better than we did when we got here. We just commit the time to you, Lord, and ask for it in your son's name. Amen. And amidst all of this, okay, I've practiced the talk. It's just this technological stuff. So Brady swore to me. He's still giving me the thumbs up. I said, are you sure this isn't banging? Purposely didn't wear long dangly earrings because that always messes with, so that could have even been a cute addition to the outfit, but I was like, no, I'm playing by the rules, no cute earrings. Well, kind of cute, they're just shorter. So So when we were talking about this, I was one of the women in the room. I thought, oh, I can throw my hat into talking about this, because as we're sitting here talking and thinking about identity and who we are, I'm somebody that struggled with that from when I look in the mirror to who I think I am when I'm sitting at the Lord's feet. You know, what do I know to be true, and then how do I walk in that? I think this talk is also on my heart because at 54, yes, I'm 54, I know, woohoo, I'm proud of it. I've been seeing things more clearly than I did years ago. You start to kind of go, oh, wow, here's some things I would say I know at 54 years old. And I watched my children's peer group, and I can see them struggling. I can see so many of you guys and see you struggling. I see my own peer group, and they're struggling. And I feel like what I'm seeing is women who are looking to the world to help them understand who they are and what they're here for. And I'm seeing it seems as if they're ultimately looking forward in the reflection of other people or other things instead of Jesus. And as I've gotten older, I've thought about what this has looked like in my life. How does God want me to live? And sincerely, what does he want me to believe? And this last fall, I read the book Imagine Heaven. I don't know how many of you have heard of it. And it's a wonderful book. And it's filled with stories of those near-death experiences where somebody's died and then they come back to share what they've learned. Experienced in so often, so many of the people met Jesus and he asked them, what did you do with the life that I gave you? Obviously, it's not gospel, it's a book, but it really challenged my thinking because I realized there's so few things that really matter here. We think we know what matters, but we don't. So I'll give you a Reader's Digest of my version in case you're sitting here thinking, I don't know if I want to stay or not. Okay, here's what it is. And I do want you to stay, okay? Brady, is this banging? Do you guys hear that? It sounds kind of, no, we're good? All right. Okay. Even though okay, how about that? You hear okay? All right, we'll try that. My talk, it's only and all about Jesus and what he says about you, who he says you are, and how you're going to live this life for him. Right? So those are good goals here this morning. So I was thinking about that. I wish I understood that years ago, because there have been times in my life I realize as I've processed that and talked or thought through this talk that I've been trapped in my view of myself. I'm going to pull this out again. That's there. Let's just try that. Can you all still hear though, right? All right, then we'll do that. So I realized we could be here for a week and talk about this, and I would barely scratch the surface. There's going to be a lot of things I'm not going to share. A lot of things I can't share, a lot of things I don't want to, so I won't. So my goal this morning is honestly just to share truth with you, and my prayer is that you grow closer to him. And like I said, there'd be one takeaway. If each one of you could leave with one takeaway, I would be so happy because I'd feel like that's what God had for you. So like Krista said, we'll have breakdown groups. And I want us to talk about in those breakdown groups the practicals that I'm going to share. And there's questions to go through. Be willing to engage with that because one of our goals for these times is that you connect with Jesus, but that connecting with other women is going to happen in that breakdown time. So as I prepare for this talk, like I said, we talked about it last fall, I decided to go on an overnighter with the Lord. And I was thinking about that. I've done that pretty regularly for about 25 years. And obviously, there's seasons of life you don't do it. When you're having babies or your kids are little, it's harder to make happen. But it was either one night or two nights away. I'd go to a hotel. I would be at our house, and Bill would take all the boys somewhere else. The idea was for me to just have alone time with the Lord. I don't know if any of you have ever done that. I highly recommend it. It's just an opportunity to sit at his feet and listen, to speak, spend hours listening to worship music, praying, just being at his feet saying, what do you have? And then I love those times. They refresh you. They encourage you. Well, last November, it was like, oh, I've kind of got an agenda. Lord, I need you to show up. It was a Tuesday night about dinner to Thursday morning. And I'm like, okay, I really would love to hear from you. I'm not telling you what to do, but boy, I really need to hear from you. We've got this women's talk coming up in January, and you know when Thanksgiving happens and Christmas, I just thought it's going to be a blur. Suddenly it'll be January 25th, and I'm not going to know what you want me to share. And I was so encouraged with how that time went. I felt like he did speak to me through worship music, through the word, and then I am going to give credit. There's a couple books that I read that I would like to tell you that are great. To me, Bible comes first. Biblically based companion books, I think they can be used too. So Wanting to Be Her by Michelle Graham and Yoo-Hoo by Rachel Jankovic. Is that right, Krista? I always mess up her name. So I read those. I thought they were very good. They've influenced parts of this talk, and I give quotes where they're due, but I just wanted to tell you they're good books. And as I was on that overnighter, I kept hearing the word restore, is either through verses or through sayings, through music, and I thought, I wonder what that even means. So I looked it up. Return something or someone to a former condition, restore to the original place or position. And that kind of intrigued me, and I thought, well, that's kind of a fascinating concept. What does it mean? Because I do believe God's in the business of restoring us to how he made us to be and who he wants us to be and draws us closer to him. So if we know him, if you have a relationship with him, you've been ultimately restored, where you know he's your father, he knows you're his child. If I'm speaking to you today and you go, oh, I don't know if I have a relationship with him, you need to get one. So before you leave here, talk to the person who brought you, talk to the person sitting next to you, talk to someone in your breakdown group, come find me, because that's going to change everything. That is like the ultimate restoration that happens. It's just that the rest of this talk is for after you've been restored to him, you still live in this world. There's still the day-to-day, how do I live in this fallen world and be restored to him? It can cause bad fruit if we don't understand how to be restored and be who he made us to be. So, like I said, I really do pray that he's going to do a work in your life this morning and help you have a better understanding of where you see yourself in all of this. So, as I thought, okay, it's going to be about restoration. How do you explain that? Because I didn't even know for sure what it meant. So what do you do? I Googled it. I Googled furniture restoration because I thought, well, you know, maybe there's some similarities between us and furniture. Maybe there's something having to do with restoration, and I had to smile. There are a lot of similarities between us and furniture. Okay? So here's this blog I found. So pretend you're the priceless family heirloom, okay? There are few things more priceless than a family heirloom, unless it is an heirloom that looks new thanks to techniques for restoring old furniture. Breathing new life into a piece is not a quick process, but it is well worth the effort when you have a beautiful furniture item to enjoy for years to come. While antique furniture restoration is time-consuming, it's not necessarily complicated as long as you follow the process step by step. The right tools and products will make the task significantly easier and infinitely rewarding. These 6 steps for restoring old furniture will get those antique pieces back in vogue, which is the tools, identifying the old finish, cleaning, patch and crack filling, stripping, and refinishing. And finally, restoring takes constant preservation, or you'll end up right back where you started. I didn't realize how much like furniture we were. I read that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, do you ever feel like God can just take a really mundane thing in the world and have you find spiritual truths in it? I'm like, I said to Bill, I found this great metaphor, spiritual, you know, it's furniture. And as he was reading my talk, he said, you know, that really does make a lot of sense. So I was thrilled about that because I'm a visual person. So here's your picture at the beginning. I'm going to show you a picture at the end. It's the bottom half of a table. You might not be able to see it. It's in terrible shape, so you don't know what it's going to look like after it's been restored, okay? So that's what we're talking about. You guys need to remember that you're priceless. Restoration is going to take time, but it's worth the effort, and you need the right tools. And if you don't upkeep it, you're going to end up right back where you started. So, proper tools. Okay, you knew I was going to say this. You need to use the Bible as your guide, your instruction manual, not what the world's going to give you, like fashion magazines. So if you use the wrong equipment, if you use what the world's going to give you, you're going to make it worse, it's not safe, and you're not going to get the results that you need. Okay, so you're going to kind of walk through this process with me, all right? So identifying the old finish, that was one of the steps. This is the longest part of the process. And so this is where, for you to hear today, is where you need to take a long, hard look at your life, your thinking, your heart, and your words. Ask yourself, what's broken in my life? Is there something broken? What is under the layers of my wrong thinking? And that leads us to, some of you might not realize where you need restoring. Because the damage in your thinking has happened over such a long period of time, you almost don't notice it anymore. Your thinking and your life seem fine to you. Someone else in your life might be looking at you going, wow, you could really probably use some help with that. And so encouragingly, that's where you want to engage with a trusted friend, your spouse, to analyze. It's like you don't do furniture restoration willy-nilly. You look at it and you figure out what needs to be done here. So be willing to look at your life. Have someone else look at your life to go, what needs to change here? because sometimes another set of eyes are the ones that are going to see it. So first you need to ask the Lord during this process what he wants to change in your life, because it's important that you know what you're working with. And some of you guys are no doubt sitting here thinking, nope, I'm doing okay. You don't really sense a need to change or even evaluate, and it probably seems like too much work, doesn't it? You know, I've looked at furniture before and I went, no, I'm not going to buy it. Why? Because it'd take too much work on my part to make a change. I just either soon not buy it or throw out what I have or buy something new. But when you're going to restore something, it takes effort. It takes part of you to do it. And in this world that we live in, what you're hearing is you're okay. There's nothing you need to change. No matter how you are, you're completely enough. There's no reason to change any part of you because you're every line of thinking you have is completely acceptable. You're okay, no matter what. So that's why you're sitting here thinking, well, I don't think I need to change. The problem is that if you look at who you are and how you evaluate or define yourself in your thinking in the way the world does, you're going to see something different than what the Lord does. Because we live in a fallen world, and in that world, you're the one that creates your story. You're the author of your life. And the character of the plot line moves according to how you want it to. But in the Lord's economy, he's the author of your life. He's the one that created it. He's the one that has the story. And so there's two different stories, from the way the world has you living and the way the Lord does. And who you believe is the creator of your story is going to change everything. So you either live under your own authority or the Lord's. So as you evaluate yourself and sit here and think, okay, I'll play Mary's game. Where would I maybe need to make changes? Where are lies that I'm believing? I was thinking there's about two areas I'd like to talk about this morning. And, you know, there's a lot of things you could share. These are two I think women, I can say this from my own experience, struggle with the most in figuring out who they are. And it's your physical appearance and then who you think you are. And that would be based on things like your abilities, talents, jobs, and circumstances. And I think physical appearance is the area women struggle in the most first because it's just right there. You know, you can't get around it. You're judged, you're summed up, you're evaluated by what others see or what you see. And most of us, honestly, don't like parts of how we're made, physically speaking. We compare ourselves to others and we come up short. Our hair is the wrong color. Our body is the wrong shape. Our weight is the wrong number. Our physical body's not the one that we want. And we look at the outward appearance first, and we almost never like it. You ask yourself, well, why is that? So I looked up the definition of body image. How a person sees themselves compared to the standards set by society. Well, no wonder we're struggling because we're comparing ourselves against societal standards. So I took it a step further. Who in society do you look at? It's models, right? Okay. On the average, models weigh between 90 and 120 pounds. They're 5'9 and are between size 2 and 4 with the hope of being zero. The average American woman weighs 170.6 pounds, is 5'4 and is now between size 16 and 18. Amen, right? Yeah, there's some. But you see that, and even if it's unrealistic, there's a part of you goes, I want to be her. I probably should be her because that's what you're hearing. Those standards are impossible for most of us to live up to. You know, have you ever had women explain how they look? And you can be guilty of this too. You run into a friend in the store and she's like, oh, don't look at me. I didn't think I'd see anyone at the store while I was running errands. Like, she's got her hair in a baseball hat, no makeup, like you could even care less. But she's kind of explaining, oh, I don't usually look like this. Maybe to their husbands at night, they're like, turn the lights out. They don't want somebody. It's true, right? I actually had a friend, she was so affected by makeup and wanting to look good, she said she sleeps with her makeup on. I said, why would you do that? She said, in case there's a fire in the middle of the night, I want to look good for the firemen. I thought she was kidding. I said, oh, you've got to be kidding. She did. She sleeps with her makeup on for that reason. So I'm sharing that because that's the reality of the world that we live in. So then you take these models, these goals, try living that within the real seasons of life. How about the years of having babies? Does anybody tell you what your body's going to look like after you've given birth? No. And even if they did, you probably wouldn't believe them. Okay, then there's menopause, one of the three times in a woman's life that their body makes and stores fat. My doctor told me that because I was like, we were talking about weight gain. He said, well, Mary, this is a time in your life your body's making and storing fat. I had been in there going, I think my thyroid's broken. I think I need some help because I can't understand why I'm not losing weight. He said, Mary, I would be a rich man if I had money for every woman that sits in my office telling me their thyroid isn't working because they're going through menopause. So I'm like, oh, awesome. How about I didn't used to look like this? Do you ever feel that way? You go, this isn't the body that I used to have. We struggle with our image, with scars, with acne, with imperfections, with eating disorders, with health issues. Bottom line, we live in a world that focuses on and celebrates outward appearance. And we say that we're not affected by it, but we are, just because of the world we live in. And I was thinking of this. I heard this conversation in Target years ago. You ever wonder why you hear something, and then later you go, oh, okay. It was the strangest thing. I think it highlights this outward appearance that our world has. So I was standing in the aisle, and these two friends met up. Clearly, they knew each other from a long time ago. One was really chatty, and the other one was really tired, kind of leaning against her cart. And the one said, oh, you look great. What have you been up to? And the other one just quietly said, my cancer's back. I've been in chemotherapy, you know, and it just kind of spilled out of her. And the other one was kind of flustered, and she said, well, I haven't seen you look this thin since college. They obviously knew each other, you know, and the one said, it's my chemotherapy. She said, well, you sure look good. And she said, well, again, I've got cancer. And there was just this awkward silence. And then the other friend said, still, those jeans look really good on you. And I, you know, she wasn't meaning to be unfeeling, you know. I just thought she didn't know what to say. And in that awkwardness, she started telling her friend how good she looked. You know, like somehow her comments were going to make her friend feel better. And I thought, well, as a reality check, how much weight do you think the woman with cancer would be willing to gain back to be cancer-free? Did she care what her jeans looked like on her? No, she didn't. You know, I thought, it's easy to go, yeah, that woman was really being unfeeling. And then I thought of this example from my own life. I went to the funeral of a good friend's baby, and I saw her, and I was like, I just suddenly didn't know what to say. So what did I say? I said, you look great, you know. And she just looked at me with these really tired eyes, and she said, it doesn't matter a lick. And I knew it. I knew I wasn't saying anything that was comforting, but I thought, why did I say that? Somehow, I thought it was going to make her feel better. And don't get me wrong, it's wonderful to compliment people on their appearance, new haircut, weight loss, new lipstick. What I'm saying just in all of this is we live in a world of visuals. You see things, you notice things, you comment on things, because that's what you see on the outside. Whether you like it or not, we also compare ourselves to each other, okay? So, this is a picture a friend of mine sent me last summer from a vacation. And we can relate, right? Because you're all scanning the picture right now to analyze if these girls look good in their bikinis, aren't you? You're kind of looking going, huh, or maybe I would look better or I would look worse in that bikini. Should they be wearing the bikinis and what you think about it, right? You can't help it. You're evaluating them based on what you're seeing. And for most of us, we're not the ones in the bikinis. We're probably the one on the end that's wearing the hat, the one piece, and the towel wrapped around her. And when I got that picture, that's actually the gal that I identified with the fastest. I thought I would have been that girl, and I actually have been that girl, and then I'm going to tell you more about that later. But that's where we do. You cannot help look at that picture and not make comparisons. Even between the women, look how different their body shapes are. But there they are in their bathing suits for you to see and evaluate. So I'm going to go on to another point, but I'm going back because I didn't want you to have to look at the women in the bikinis the whole time I was talking. So we got the physical appearance that we can kind of use to evaluate our identity. The other one, because we get that, because it's what we see in the mirror. And then when I was thinking about that, then it's also how do we view ourselves? Who do we view ourselves as? So ask yourself, what defines you? Is it your circumstances? Is it your abilities? Maybe it's other people. Maybe it's money, maybe it's possessions or your health. It's a really tender and complicated subject because there's a lot of layers to it. So I've been thinking about this in my own life, all the years that have led up to being 54 where I feel like I'm figuring some stuff out. And I feel like, it or not, there were a lot of years that I let other people define who I was more than I should have. And in hindsight, I can see exactly how the Lord used it, but along the way, it was really not easy. So in high school, I was not the super popular girl by definition. I wasn't the cheerleader. I wasn't the prom queen. I didn't have a boyfriend. Most Friday nights, I spent making cookies with my best friend. It was a hard time for me, and I was kind of ready. I'm going to go off to college and be a different person. And my struggles followed me to college. I developed four particularly close friendships in college, a dancer, a scholar, a comedian, and this gal that had a personality bigger than life. And I just wanted to be them for different reasons. That there's beauty, there was popularity, there were talents, there were boyfriends in abundance, and there was this confidence they had. And I figured that if somehow I had those looks or talents, then that I'd be happier than I was. It was subtle, because if you met me, you'd go, Mary's pretty self-assured or pretty confident, and I would have told you I was okay with myself. But I realized that friendships with other women affect you, and they can really affect you, especially if you're living with them or really sharing your lives with them. You start to, you get affected by who they are. And in my estimation, my life never looked like theirs, and somehow mine was the one that was wrong. Somehow mine needed to change in order to be more than that it was. And I thought if I could have what they wanted somehow, if I could have what I thought mattered, then I would be more peaceful with who I was when I was all alone. I'd feel better about myself, and I'd know that I had some kind of a value. I was about 20, 21 years old, so I thought, well, if what I have, what the world says is important, then I could quit trying so hard. You know, if others had it, why couldn't I? It must be attainable. It was subtle, because it was kind of just under the radar, but it was constant. And what I didn't see or understand at the time was I was letting these people define who I was supposed to be based on who they were, rather than anything else. You know, so in addition to wanting, oh, I want a different body, I'd like to be like my friend who is the dancer, I thought, oh, maybe I'd like to be funny like her, or smart like her, or athletic like her, and I wanted a boyfriend. I wanted someone to like me, someone that was going to love me, someone who thought I was amazing. I wanted somebody to validate every part of me that I thought was lacking, and I wanted someone to choose me. It was a really hard time in my life because when you want all that, you're not happy. You're looking for something. So it was at 21 during this whole process that I got saved. It had been kind of simmering for, well, a lot longer than I realized. Came to a boiling point, spilled out over spring break. I just kind of fell apart. And right up to the point of even asking Jesus into my heart, I'd been kind of compromising Mary, who I was, in order to find what I would say is like this inner peace. And I remember my sister even asking me at one point, she said, why are you even acting like this? This is not like you. I thought, oh, it wasn't. I had kind of disassociated myself from my actions and who I was. I was lost. So my sister and my brother share the gospel with me. I got saved hook, line, and sinker. And it was then that my value system began changing because I began to get an understanding of who I was in Christ, not who I was in the world. I grew in an understanding that I was loved completely by my Maker. Because I was at rock bottom at that time. It wasn't for what others saw or for what I could offer or what I thought I was looking for. It was simply because I was His. It was a love that I had never known before. And I believed Him. I believed that I stood blameless before Him, that He died for me, that I was precious to Him. He loved everything about me. He didn't need me to change. He was going to help me become the woman He created me to be. And He had plans for my life. And I realized now that His Spirit was in me, I could live, think, and act differently than I ever had been able to. I could be who I needed to be, not who I thought I was supposed to be. And I'd never been loved like that. I came from a very secure background. My parents loved me. It was kind of an odd thing. You go, why are you even struggling with this? It was what was going on in the deep, deep inside of me when I was all alone. I needed to know that I was completely loved and forgiven for who I was, not apart from who I thought I needed to be. I'd finally gotten the relationship that I was looking for, that I dreamed about, only it was better. I had been chosen. That was a real turning point for me. It was began to pursue my relationship with Him, and it changed the way I began viewing myself. It changed course. I can look right back to March 28, 1986, and say, that's when He gave me a vision for my life and has brought good into it every day since. It's been interesting to me over those years. I thought it was 30, and it's like 35. I look back on those friends. Remember the ones that were my measuring stick on what I want to be like them. I wanted to be like them. They were the ones. And some of them don't know the Lord, and then some that do aren't living for Him. But I thought through their lives, because I've kept up with them, there's six divorces between the four of those gals. And within there's real brokenness, there's addiction, there's heartache. And we're all 35 years older. We all have wrinkles, we all have more gray hair, and bodies that don't look at all like they did at 18. But over that time, I have a joy and a peace and an identity that can't be taken away from me, no matter what other those things are changing, because I know and I believe who he says that I am. And that was a turning point for me. And yes, I can still struggle with physical appearance or natural comparisons. I'm human. And even as a Christian, just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're not going to struggle with these things. It's a whole different ballgame. But that's why it's so important for you guys to believe and know what's true. I love this quote of Rick Warren's. He said, if you want to change the way you live, you have to start in your mind. You have to know and believe God's truth. And the truth I chose to believe all those years ago, the one I still have to remind myself daily, is I'm living for a different audience. And I have a different set of standards, a different way of looking at myself. I now see Mary as completely restored, not because of what I have to offer, not because of anything on my appearance, but because of who he says that I am. I can see the masterpiece underneath all the layers of the human body he's given me. So this is a classic verse, but a good one to share. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So we've got the physical appearance, who you think you are. Those are big parts of identifying that old finish that we're talking about. So now what? What happens next as we move on in the process of restoring you? You've analyzed where there's needs. It is the cleaning, patching, stripping. And the guy said on his website, these steps are sometimes uncomfortable. Like, yeah, I'll bet, you know. It has to happen. This can take a really long time to clean out some of the layers of damage that have been done. And some of us are sitting here with way more layers than others. We can't begin to see the masterpiece that's there, but God can. And that's why we need to use the tools of the Creator. The one who made you is the one that can restore you. And as I worked on this talk, you know how your phone or your computer will bring up things you've been thinking or researching. I got these beauty ads popping up on the side of my computer. No kidding, this is an actual motto of a beauty brand. It said, beauty begins with truth. And they were talking about, you know, the truth of the ingredients in your lotion, you know. But I'm like, that is so true. Beauty begins with truth. It's just not the truth that they were talking about. So applying truth, you need to spend time with him. You need to sit at his feet. You need to learn about him, his grace, and how he wants to work in your life. You need to be honest with him and vulnerable. You're not going to share something with him or discover something with him that he doesn't know anyway. You need to know that you're complete in him, and it's going to change your view of yourself. Then you're going to act on it, because the root of how you see yourself ultimately is based on what you believe God sees you or how he sees you. He can take your image struggles. He can take your insecurities and draw you closer. Like this quote by Rachel, she says, know God and you will know yourself. You need to be having times alone with him, asking him to help you. And then as you pursue truth in this cleaning, patching, stripping stage, like I said, it can be painful. And this is where you really would want a friend, a trusted friend, a godly friend, or your husband to help you. To have somebody else say, ooh, you need to scrub a little harder here. You need to work a little harder at this. You missed a spot. Don't be afraid to say, I need some help with this. And then have that other person say, I'm here for you. And as a practical note, I just want to remind you guys, this isn't enough to just feel good about yourself, that God loves you, so I'm good. It's not license for you to just be in your flesh and sin and go, well, Jesus died for me, so ... Because, you know, yes, he did die for you, and yes, he forgave you. But in this process, there needs to be an honest appraisal of what's going on in your life, and there might be some things you need to change, some things you need to grow in. You might need self-control or help, maybe with your physical body. Maybe your relationship with food isn't a healthy one. Maybe your relationship with alcohol is not a healthy one. Maybe you need accountability for where you're spending your time, what you're watching, what you're reading. What is it that has a hold on your life and your heart? Because there's some very real physical struggles that we can have, and you cannot just cover them over with, God loves me and who I am on the inside. Because it's true, but we need to be faithful stewards of the body that God gave us. We need to have healthy boundaries in our lives. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And yes, I have a verse for that. It's in the Message. I like this translation. It says, looking at it one way, you could say anything goes. Because of God's immense generosity and grace, we don't have to dissect and scrutinize every action to see if it will pass muster. But the point is not to just get by. We want to live well. but our foremost effort should be to help others live well. So knowing and applying truth helps you see, as you're in with the Lord, you're getting truth, you're recognizing things, it's going to help you understand and see the lies in the world that's around us. And one of the lies you will hear, whether you realize it or not, is that you don't need Jesus in your life to be who you were born to be. You just need yourself. That's the end of the story. You need what you have to offer. You need to do and be what makes you happy. Do you see those layers, those lies? There's a part of that that almost sounds true, doesn't it? Yeah, well, I could kind of see that. But it's like a half lie, half truth. So it's still a lie. We just stop with part of it, and then we start getting affected by it without going, wait a minute, I'm not sure that all makes sense. So, personal example from my life. I like watching American Idol. I don't know how many of you guys do. I like watching the tryouts, and then they, you know, have the singing competition, and then the elimination. In the last couple years, Lionel Richie's been one of the judges. And, you know, I've always liked Lionel. And so I've noticed, though, before he gives, like, bad news, like, hey, you're not going to make it, you've been eliminated, he couches it with something positive, which is a great thing. And his phrase he seems to have used a lot last year and maybe the year before was, don't ever forget, you were born enough. And then he'd go on, and I'd sit there and think, yeah, Lionel, you preach it. You were born enough. That seems like a really good thing to say, doesn't it? You were born enough in and who you are. I thought, well, you know, in all reality, I shared that with my children growing up. I'd give them the big talk. You can do it. You're wonderful. You're amazing. Go out and change the world. But there was a part of it that Lionel left off that I would add, which is by God's Spirit, by God's work within you. It was by the power of Christ. I would say to the boys, not because I'd tell them, you have nothing to offer this world. You have nothing in and of yourself and who you are, but by the Holy Spirit living within you, then you can change the world. Then you can make a difference. Hard work, it's a challenge, you bet, but it's only possible by His Spirit. And that's where you guys want to be, where you need to be, which is powerless apart from Christ. So I get what Lionel's saying, that, you know, you were born enough, but you weren't. That's just all there is to it, because what the world do? It leaves God out of it. He has no part in the world's thinking. They preach that lie that God is not enough, and somehow we start to believe it. Like, if I didn't take my thoughts any deeper when I was watching Lionel one night, I would have gone to bed, and then after another night watched it again, and you just start thinking, yeah, it must be true because I'm hearing it on American Idol. There must be a truth to it. So you guys need to be very sure in all of this, Satan is going to lie to you with what you hear from the world. It says, be alert and cautious at all times. That enemy of yours, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Be careful. You need to be very careful about what you believe to be true. So in this stage of the restoration process, we need a master restorer, one who can lead us down the path that he has for us. And we need to trust the master restorer in order to see who we really are as this refinishing, this restoring process is happening. So you go, what is the truth that he'd share with you? If I'm trying to believe truth, here's the lies of the world, what do I need to be true? What do I know? What do I need to know to be true as I sit and listen to him? You need to know he died for you. He created you. He thinks exactly how you are as a masterpiece. He knows all about you, and he doesn't make mistakes. I know that sounds corny. I know it sounds like a Hallmark card. God doesn't make mistakes, but see, it's true. He doesn't make mistakes. Your life, your body, the way you're wired is not plan B. You may think you're living an alternative plan. You might not like the plan that you're living. You're the understudy hoping for the big break, but you are, in fact, living plan A. You might want a different body. You might want to be healthy. You might want to be married. You might want to not be married. You might want a boyfriend, a different job, a different home, a different set of friends. You might want a lot of things. But in him, you are who he meant for you to be right now. Read Psalm 139. It's an amazing psalm to communicate who you are with the Lord. He knows everything about you, and he's got his eye on you. You are living the life that he has for you, and it's one in which he can get glory by the way you live it. He wants your identity to be grounded in him and not in anything else. He would tell you, you were not born enough. He would say, no, I don't agree with Lionel Richie. You do not have what it takes. You don't have anything to offer in and of yourself. And by the way, you're focusing a little too much on yourself. He'd tell you, I don't care what your hair looks like. I don't care about your body. I don't care about your hair color, your skin color, your nails. He looks at your heart. He made your body. He just doesn't care that much about it because it's not going to matter in heaven. No matter how good you have it looking right now, you are not taking that body with you. It is of no real lasting value. It's just a vessel. It's just a tool that he's going to use while you're here. Yourself is a tool he'll use. It's not your destination. It's not where he wants you to land and say, this is who I am, because our bodies here are just temporal anyway. He'd say, I want to know what you're doing with the life that I gave you. How are you spending it? Is it on things that don't matter and won't last? Or are you investing in my people? Are you doing what I put you here to do? So his opinion, his assessment of you is where your identity needs to be found, not in anything else. And you, for your part, need to believe what he says. He is what our reflection should show, because you're never going to be able to live beyond who you think you are unless you understand who God says you are. And all along, like I said, Satan is not going to want you to do that. He doesn't want you to live who you were created to be, so he's going to lie to you. And it's very subtle. He will distort your thinking. This is the quote from one of those two books. I don't remember which book it came out of, so I'll just say it's from one of those two books. It says, we can live an entirely different life due to the simple fact that we determined to believe that we are indeed who God says we are. You know, Bill said to me once, I tended to dismiss his compliments. Like he would say, oh, you look pretty. No, I don't. Oh, that looks really nice on you. I'd look better if I lost 5 pounds. You know, I just wouldn't accept them. You know, buy me a pretty nightgown. Oh, that looks really nice on you. No, no, turn the light out. I dismissed what he was trying to say to me. And he said to me once, Mary, I need you to believe that you're beautiful to me. I need you to believe it, and then I need you to act on it. Because every time I dismissed it, it was taking away from what he was trying to tell me. And I could stand there and look in the mirror and go, what? He thinks this is beautiful? Because I saw myself in the mirror and critiqued what I saw. I saw what I thought needed to be different. He liked the whole package. He liked the way it was all put together, and he wanted me to believe it. So I really practically worked on that. He would say it. I'd look in the mirror and say, you are beautiful. And you know what? It starts affecting your thinking. You really do start believing what you know to be true. I still question his opinion sometimes, but I'm like, okay, because I know he means it, I'm going to believe it, and it will change the way I respond to him. True beauty radiates from your soul because it's a reflection of who you are to Jesus. So no matter how you see yourself, if you're a believer, if you have a relationship with him, he sees you as flawless. And I looked up this definition because I love it. It says, without any mistake or shortcomings, unmarked, unimpaired, without blemish or imperfections, no fault to diminish your value. And it's the cross that's made you flawless. But you have to ask yourself, do I believe it? Can you look in the mirror and thank God for who he's made you to be and what he wants you to do? He wants you to be able to do that. Proverbs 23:7 says, as a man thinks within himself, so is he. You need to change the way your thinking is so it changes the way that you act. So that's kind of bringing us through the practicals of cleaning, stripping, and patching. And then we're getting to the refinishing part. Finish strong. I was going to say the fun part, but refinishing still isn't necessarily fun, but you want to finish strong because you're in the home stretch, okay? You've sat here, you've made an honest appraisal of your life, you've seen where damage may have happened, or you're starting to think, oh yeah, those are lies that I've believed. The restoration process is happening. You've begun cleaning and applying truth to the lies that you've heard, and that you're starting to believe this might be different. So you're well on the road to being restored. You're putting on protective sealant. Aren't you feeling like a piece of furniture? You're kind of putting on furniture polish, and you're going to stay protected. So now there's an understanding, okay, he set me on a new course, and as you grasp that, it will change how you embrace it. So he wants to use your life for all kinds of things. Whether you think you have it in you or not, he says, yes, you're mine. I've got plans for you. Now you need to invest your life into his business. Because he lives in you, your life really isn't your own anymore. You need to invest it for him. And the world will tell you, this life is what matters. I don't know the last time I heard someone in the world talk about eternity. They don't. It's temporal. It's right here. It's right now. But when you understand there's an eternity, you're going to live and change choices that you make here because you are an eternal being. And this is that book that I talked about, Imagine Heaven. And Jesus did keep saying, what did you do with the life I gave you? And you need to be able to answer that. We will stand before Jesus one day and explain our life to him. You were made to reflect the image of God. And since he lives in you, even if you're struggling with how that old body's put together, it's holy because he lives within you. As Michelle Graham said, the body God chose for each of us, our eyes, our hair, our chest, our calves, is actually not ours. It's a tool for the kingdom. Romans 6:13 says, offer the parts of your body to God to be used for his good. So you need to have this bigger picture of who God says you are. So on the mornings you go, my jeans are really tight. I don't like the way my bra fits. It doesn't matter. This is the body God's given you, and he's going to use it for his glory. She also said, has it ever occurred to us the way we treat our body can be a statement to the world about who God is? It's the beauty of our character when we're living for Jesus. And we think it's important to put on our lipstick and brush our hair, and those things are important. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, I spent an hour deciding what I was going to wear yesterday. That's great. But what's more important is to get dressed in the things of God, meaning you want people to see Jesus in you. You want him to radiate out of you in order to change lives because of him in you, not because of who you are. And it means living with your body in a way that honors God. It means modesty. It means humility. It means bringing your creator honor. We need to be an example to others. Practical ideas of investing your life for the kingdom. Spend time getting to know him better. Be faithful with your children and your husband. Invest your life in other women, those who don't know him yet and those who are just beginning their walk. Be faithful with your time and your resources. Be a good friend, student, or coworker. Use your body, your life, exactly how he has made you to be for his plans and purposes. So as we conclude, it doesn't matter what you know, it doesn't matter what I say, if you're not going to do anything with it, if it's just head knowledge. You have to ask yourself, am I going to be obedient to what the Lord is nudging me with this morning? Am I getting uncomfortable with something? Is there something he's saying to me I need to take ownership of and change? Maybe it's just praying with him about it. Maybe it's confiding in a friend or your husband. Here's what I'm thinking. Are you going to walk in it? Are you going to leave this morning and say, I didn't need to hear any of that? You did need to hear this. There has to be something the creator of the universe, the creator of you, wants to say to you and have you change in your life. Are you willing to be restored? So think again about what we talked about. We're all masterpieces underneath an exterior that comes in many shapes and sizes, varying degrees of damage and brokenness. And if you know Christ, you've been ultimately restored, and that masterpiece is under there. And our Creator tells us this. He wants us to take him at his word and live at his word. But the choice is ours. So ask yourself as you're sitting here, do I believe it? Will you let him do a work in your life to restore you? Not just in salvation, but it's those everyday choices afterward. Because it doesn't get easier once you're a Christian. You still are out in the world. You still are dealing with lies. You are still dealing with other women and your flesh. But by God's Holy Spirit that lives within you, it makes the difference to combat the lies and to change your way of thinking. So do you believe him? Or are you believing the world that we live in? You need to understand the importance, the vital importance of walking in forgiveness. Are you willing to pursue him and to deepen your relationship with him so that you can not only be restored but stay that way? Remember, this is the admonition from that blog post. Restoring takes constant preservation or you will end up right back where you started. That's who we are. If you are not in the word every day, having that be your goal, and I'm not meaning legalistic, oh, I missed a day, that's not good. I'm saying your heart, your goal needs to be, I am pursuing the Lord every day of my life to make a difference in who I am, how I see myself, and to draw closer to him. So remember, here's our before picture. Ooh, wonder what it looks like. Look at that. You would not know that was under there. There's incredible detail on the legs. It's in a completely different color. There's a shine. You wouldn't know it was there if it hadn't been restored. You're a little more valuable than a table leg. Seriously, you are so valuable to the Lord. And there's a masterpiece waiting to come out, get some of the lies, the yuck off, and be who God has you to be. You are a work of your Father, your Creator, and He wants you to live a restored life in Him. But the choice is yours.